from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, I'm Cy Musiker, sitting in for Michael Krasny. 1 year ago, state lawmakers approved far-reaching changes to public school funding, putting more power in the hands of local school boards, teachers, and parents, and providing new resources for English language learners and other disadvantaged students. School districts have now delivered their plans for the new local control funding formula. And we're going to talk about local control in this hour of Forum and find out how the money is being spent and about school districts and how they'll measure their progress. That's our topic next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio, I'm Cy Musiker, sitting in for Michael Krasny. 1 year ago, state lawmakers approved far-reaching changes to public school funding, putting more power in the hands of local school boards, teachers, parents, and providing new resources for English language learners and other disadvantaged students. School districts have responded. They've delivered their plans for the new local control funding formula. The deadline was July 1st. We're going to talk about local control in this hour of Forum with these questions in mind. How exactly should the money be spent? How will parents and watchdog groups ensure that school boards and principals and teachers make the best use of the money? And will the new funding formula help students do better in school? And how will we measure that progress? We'll pose those questions to the prime author of Local Control, a close observer, an administrator, and a parent. Joining me in the studio right now is Jonathan Kaplan. He's a senior policy analyst at the California Budget Project. That's a public policy research and watchdog group based in Sacramento. And by phone, Michael Kurse, president of the State Board of Education, Stanford professor, and the man who helped devise local control. Welcome to you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. And let me ask you first, Michael Kurse, tell us a script, if you would, for a midsummer blockbuster about education reform. And take us back a couple years to when you were thinking about why we needed local control for California schools. What was going through your minds and the minds of your colleagues?
Well, we've been working on this for over 30 years to try and improve the California school finance system. Let me say that this is not primarily an approach that guarantees that all students will have an adequate amount of money. This is more about the distribution of the monies that we have. That being said, the governor and the legislature have been increasing California spending for K-12 education by over 10% compounded in the past 2 years. And we also are looking towards a six-year phase-in of this program funding, which will raise low-income school districts, for example, by 50% per pupil or more, and raise all districts by a significant amount. So the California school finance system was the most over-controlled by the state I knew of in the country. We, early in the 60s and 70s, adopted and then continued a process of earmarking funds for very specific purposes that locals must spend money on. These are called categorical programs. It means you have to spend it on school lunches or school gardens or counselors or particular types of children, and it was very prescriptive. We had 41 of these programs or more, depending on how you count, so that the locals could not move the money around to meet their local needs. They had to respond heavily to state prescription and auditors saying, spend the money in this particular field or area, and we'll come down and audit you if you don't do that right. So the idea was to reverse the flow of power in a realization that the state government couldn't understand how to do this in a state with 6.2 million pupils, 1,000 of school districts, and over 10,000 schools. So we basically increased the funding and then liberated the locals to be able to spend it on their local priorities to meet our new Common Core education standards, which are better than the prior ones. And so it's fundamentally a bet that a local process with local communities and local groups will have the better chance of understanding effective spending than state direction.
So power to the districts, but also you wanted to help the districts better serve foster kids, the poor, and English language learners. And how does local control do a better job of that?
Okay, the prior funding formula essentially was a flat grant. It did not adjust for pupil needs. We all know that pupils that, for example, come to school not speaking much English and low income, for example, will need more money over the long term. So we did have adjustment factors in there for these low-income pupils, English learners who are not low-income, there are very few of those, and then foster care. And given that we've been cutting the school districts in the past, we just can't figure out at the state level and detail what they ought to spend their money on. I'm now 75. I did this job in the state board before with Governor Brown in the 70s and early 80s. And as we've gotten older, we've realized it's just too complex to say, spend it on these 41 things. And this will work, and they're all many little itsy-bitsy things. So I don't think the state is capable of making these kinds of detailed decisions the way they did in the past.
Yeah, and there are some key deadlines that have just come and gone. School districts around the state have been delivering their plans. What do you make of the presentations, the plans that have been delivered to the state school board?
Well, they've just finalized them, and it's, as I say, there are 1,000 school districts out there, so we have not done an analysis. One thing is sure, two things I think are very clear. One, we've gotten much more local participation. All kinds of local groups have sprung up to participate in school budgets. Budgets were sleepy affairs often in school districts, incrementally budgeting amounts of money, not looking at the base of what you're spending it on. So we have been able to involve many more parents and community groups. We've had much better outreach by school districts in across the state in communicating with their communities, and new groups have formed. So our view was to reverse the power and create bottom-up power to look at these budgets. Moreover, I think it's pretty clear that we've merged the curriculum and instruction side of school districts much closer to the budget. In the past, they often proceeded without a clear idea on how these expenditures would improve instruction and improve pupil outcomes. There are 8 state outcomes that the state is looking for. So we're trying to get out of saying how you ought to spend the money, but holding school districts accountable for what you ought to spend it on. And so I think that's also there, and we, from all indications, that the districts have a state guidance for how to think about this locally. We don't tell them what to spend the money on. It's called a local control accountability plan, and from that we're looking. They are taking a careful look, as we see it, about the needs of low-income children and thinking through what they need. We just can't, again, figure this out at the state level and say this ought to work in Santa Ana and Eureka. You know, there's just too much difference in such a big state.
Let's turn now to Jonathan Kaplan, a senior policy analyst at the California Budget Project, specializing in education. And Mr. Kaplan, you've called local control Obamacare for education. What did you mean by that?
Well, it's as Michael has pointed out, it's a very complex enterprise, public education. However, this new way of funding schools, establishing equity as a principle, a key principle for how we fund schools, really rationalizes what was, as Michael pointed out, a pretty complex and incomprehensible way that we funded schools previously. So establishing equity is a major step forward for the way the state funds K-12 schools. And while progress has been made, as with any major change, there's a lot of details that need to be worked out. And to be fair to the State Board of Education, the legislature deferred a lot of key questions to the State Board, which they're working out right now. We have a State Board meeting this week that's going to continue the discussion about how these rules are going to be crafted to ensure that dollars that are allocated to districts to support disadvantaged students are actually used for that purpose. And so one of the key issues that remains is developing a level of transparency that allows local stakeholders the ability to know whether these dollars are allocated in the way that they were intended, and to hold school districts accountable to ensure that these dollars are used effectively, not from how the state prescribes how dollars are spent, but rather how local stakeholders think that should happen.
And those local stakeholders being parents and perhaps the schools themselves and the kids. And I believe you had some concerns about the way the accountability setup was being created when the legislature first acted a year ago. What were your concerns and how have they evolved? You think the state board is doing a good job of creating a clear set of accountability rules?
Well, the state board had quite a task in front of it in terms of how it was going to go about developing the rules that were, deferred from the legislature, the tough decisions about how we were going to actually set up a system that did this well. And the state board has made a tremendous amount of progress. There's been a lot of engagement with advocates and parents and stakeholders across the state. But still, the rules are falling short. Neither local stakeholders nor state policymakers will have basic information they need to understand whether the new funding formula is actually doing what it's supposed to do. For example, school districts are not required to report how much they spent on disadvantaged students in a prior year in order to make a comparison to the current year. And that leaves some questions for, and I think, engaging local stakeholders is a great opportunity, and it really has fundamentally changed the way the state is related to education. And now local stakeholders are as Michael pointed out, much more engaged in the process. But that's an opportunity that we really need to make sure we take advantage of and not leave transparency open to a question where stakeholders can't figure out how these dollars are actually being spent.
Yeah, Michael Kirst, you said a minute ago that a lot of school board hearings in the past, school board budget hearings in the past, have been sleepy affairs, poorly attended, people badly understood. Did you attend some of these school board meetings around the state? Did you have a chance to see how well school boards were engaging parents and other stakeholders?
Well, I attended a few, but it's a vast state. But we also get the local districts have to, in their budget plan now, have to document how they've involved the community and parents and students as well. Will be coming into this as a more major factor. And we then looked at what they wrote they had done, and they reported this to the counties And it's really quite impressive in many places. Now, I'm sure there's places where it's just as sleepy as it ever was.
Mm-hmm.
But I was surprised how many groups and how much parental group interest and parental interest there was in this. And now the students are also quite interested, and we're going to give them a role in our regulations in July. Yeah, I think it's made a major difference there, and it's really a revolution in terms of the flow of power. It's changed who's powerful, because the groups that are most powerful in Sacramento, playing inside baseball with the executive branch that I'm in and the legislative branch, they really have lost a lot of influence under this, and the board cannot exceed the law. So some of the differences we have with groups like Mr. Kaplan is talking about are, we just are a regulatory agency. We don't make the law.
Yeah, Juan Cruz joins us now by phone. He's assistant superintendent for the Eastside Union High School District. And Mr. Cruz, you were one of the first to have your accountability plan ready back in March, I believe. Give us some highlights.
Yes, we were lucky that we had already been engaged with our community, all our stakeholders, parents, students, and staff, around our strategic plan. So we had done a lot of outreach and prioritizing of services and developing our goals and metrics. So we were ahead of the game in that sense, because we were already engaged in that work. So we took that work developed our draft of our LCAP based on the priorities that the community had outlined. And so we took that out to the community once again to make sure that we were in line with what they had told us and anything that we may have missed. And so we were doing that already in March.
Yeah, and you have proposed putting more social workers at schools, putting a single social worker at the district headquarters for foster and homeless kids. Tell us a little bit more about what you have in mind for spending these new resources, these new funds that you have?
Right. So our community really felt that there were two items or two things that were needed in our high schools at this time. Those were academic counselors and social-emotional support. And so we went ahead and took that, and we are going to be having one social worker at each of one of our high schools to deal with the social-emotional things that, you know, students are having to struggle with in this time of you know, real change for them. The other one is we've added academic counselors across the board through our general fund, and then also through the supplemental funds to our most needy schools, our decile 1 through 3 schools. We also heard from the community that there was a need for greater access for library services, so we've added 2 librarians to increase access. And then on top of that, we know that there's a huge need for us to do parent outreach, and so we are developing a system where we're going to create parent centers at each of our high schools as a point of contact for our parents and staff it with a parent involvement specialist.
I imagine that's particularly important for parents who may have English language issues of their own, who may not have English as their first language.
Correct, and we're looking at placing the staff with the at schools with where the language is the most need. We're looking at existing staff and who speaks, you know, the various languages, and then making sure that we place somebody that may at a school where maybe that is not covered already.
We're discussing California's new local control funding formula, under which the state gives local school boards and administrators more control over how they spend their funds, especially for English language learners and foster kids. And we're talking to Juan Cruz, the assistant superintendent at Eastside Union High School. And Mr. Cruz, let me ask you about accountability, an issue that Jonathan Kaplan raised from the California Budget Project a minute or two ago. How are you going to measure your success in using these new funds?
So we have in the our plan, we have metrics that our board has adopted in regards to student success. And that's, you know, around decreasing our dropout rate, increasing graduation, and attainment of the UCCSU eligibility, as well as increasing our attendance rates and decreasing our suspension and expulsion rates. So those are the metrics that our board felt that were needed for us to evaluate our overall program. And so we've embedded those, obviously, in the LCAP. The activities or the resources that are put in the plan are directly related to the work that needs to be done in regards to students being successful. So they're all attached to these, you know, these services, and so we will be evaluating our effectiveness of the plan based on our those metrics.
Juan Cruz, give us some other highlights. What are you hearing from parents about your plans for this?
So as we went out to the community with our drafts, I mean, all our stakeholders, you know, felt that the goals and the metrics were in line with what they had talked to us during the process. So they endorsed it quite well. You know, clearly we have had many years of budget cuts, and so restoring to the level that we're going to need is going to take some time, but they felt that we were well underway in meeting the needs of our students, and this was the first phase of that. So most of our community felt that we were on the right track. They endorse our plan. They clearly know that we need more counseling services and more support services, but they knew that this was our first phase of a 3-year plan.
Thank you so much for joining us. Juan Cruz is the assistant superintendent for Eastside Union High School District. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And let me turn back to Michael Kearse, the president of the State Board of Education. And Mr. Kearse, you heard Juan Cruz talk about his plan, and they submitted that back in March. So do you have staff looking over these plans and evaluating them? Are any being kicked back to districts and told you need to do a different, better job, a different job?
Right. This is where, again, we have much more of a local scene here. We use the 56 county offices in California to look at these plans. The county offices of education already look at local budgets in terms of whether the budgets were balanced and whether they're running deficits and so on. So they are then, in, if you will, the field offices of the state, and they are then have been, turning back plans and asking for revisions. And so we will not get these plans in Sacramento. We will monitor, the overall nature of them, but we're not reviewing them one by one in Sacramento. So the paper doesn't even come to us. We need to be careful about what's going on, and we will do that through a comparative analysis of what the counties are approving and what the districts are submitting. So it's a change even there. Under the old system, you submitted all this paper for 41 different programs back to Sacramento, and then you had a compliance officer sitting there and an auditor, and they checked off boxes as to whether the money was spent right. Notice that the East Side discussion was more about, how are we going to improve kids that are preparation for college and student suspensions. So it's changing the thinking away from a compliance system that is centered in Sacramento.
And Jonathan Kaplan, from the California Budget Project, what did you hear from that discussion with Juan Cruz? Did you think that there's enough accountability in the way they've created their program?
Well, Eastside Union High School District is probably one of the better actors here in terms of how school districts are developing the plans. They had early engagement with stakeholders, and that is commendable. But still, there are questions that remain whether the transparency in these plans, the template that was set up for all school districts to fill out. It's, I would agree with Michael Kirst that, the old system was very complex and it we're not arguing to go back to where we were. However, the new system is also pretty complex. These templates that were developed make it difficult for local stakeholders to really understand what's happening. Local stakeholders need access to easy to understand information about how the dollars districts receive support disadvantaged students. And what we're hearing from local groups is that the information available is not sufficient for them to understand whether school districts are adhering to the requirements to increase or improve services for disadvantaged students.
And I imagine different county school boards, which are looking at all of these plans, may be doing a better or worse job.
We have 1,000 different school districts in this state. We have many, many different examples that are going to be coming in. And there will be, there's no question that this is a move forward in terms of how the state is deciding to allocate dollars. But the key issue here is whether information will be available to those that are making decisions. And that's not just superintendents. That's parents, that's community members, that's business leaders. It's all people in the community. And whether or not they're going to be able to look at these local control accountability plans and make hide or hair of them. Unfortunately, it's a difficult thing to put into one piece of information, all of these different component pieces. But that's sort of what we're expecting out of these plans.
We're going to talk some more in the next half hour. This is Forum. We'll continue our conversation about local control for schools, what one observer has called Obamacare for Education, and we'll take your questions and comments after a short break. If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Cy Musiker, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Cy Musiker, sitting in for Michael Krasny. We're discussing how the state is providing new resources to foster children, the poor, and English learners, and giving school districts new powers to allocate those funds. What's going on in your school district and at your school? Join the discussion. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And we're going to go now to the phones and hear from a parent. Picolia Manigo is the program director with the Bay Area Leadership Action Network. And she has a daughter at Roosevelt Middle School in Oakland. And Picolia, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I hope I'm getting your name right. Say it for us.
It's Picolia.
Picolia. And Picolia, how old is your daughter?
My daughter is 11. She just transitioned from Carl B. Monk Elementary, where I'm the vice president of the school site council, and is now going to middle school.
Well, that's very exciting for her. Ms. Watson, you've attended a number of, Ms. Manigo, you've attended a number of meetings to give your ideas on how the district should spend its money. What did you fight for?
Well, we fought for a couple of different things, the biggest message being that we as community wanted to be partners. I think that LCSF provides a great opportunity for a lot of involvement. But when we talk about parents and students having involvement, it kind of leaves out the fact that we also are experts at what our children need and what we as students need. And so we wanted to have partnership. We wanted to make sure that funds got down to the school side so that parents could really authentically engage from their own perspectives. In a community that they actually know. We wanted parents to be able to understand district-level information, and so we pushed a lot for transparency of information, making sure that stakeholders understand that there is a complexity to LCSF, but that it still requires us as a district and as a community to partner together and to figure out those common languages and being able to have a dialogue about what the best use of funds can be.
Yeah, and you sound like you're a very involved parent. You were vice president at your daughter's elementary school of the parent-teacher council. So what about other parents? Do you think other parents are as engaged or have the opportunity to be engaged?
A lot of parents did get engaged over here in OUSD, but what we had as a challenge was that the engagement didn't go as deep as we really wanted to. And that really have to, be accounted to the timeline that the regulations came out a little bit later than the standard process for budgeting and engaging communities. But what we heard from parents in my school community as well as parents from other school communities was that even when they did want to get involved, it wasn't the level of the information wasn't presented in a way that really asked them for their opinion and really asked for them to voice their experience as parents of foster youth, as parents of English learners, and as parents who are low income. And so we are constantly in a process over this summer to figure out from our community what does authentic partnership look like from a parent perspective and from a student perspective to support our district to do the job better next year.
And what did you get? What new services are going to be available at the school your daughter is going to?
Well, at our school, we were able to really utilize the services to increase the number of hours for our psychologists. We were able to create smaller class sizes with regards to, we have a smaller population of English learners, and so we were able to pull out English learners during what normally would be like a reading time to do more small group intervention reading to support them and to raise their skills and strategies on how to learn English, but also be able to still perform at grade level. We also spent funds on additional support with regards to school climate, so really having a staff person come in to teach students other ways to address bullying, other ways to address, yard behavior. We really tried to target it in as many of the state priorities as possible, but it was not a lot. Our district, Oakland Unified School District, sent about $14 million down to school site, which for our school site equated to just a couple of $1,000s more than what we would have normally gotten. And so, that's just something to keep in mind, that even with the increase in funding that came down, there still are huge needs at school sites and in school communities.
Well, let's go to the phones now. And people are so passionate about education and the quality of the schools where their kids go to school. It's such a big part of their lives. And we have Ben in Albany with a question. Go ahead, Ben.
Yes, I had a question about how the new funding formulas are going to affect special education.
Yeah, Michael Kirst, let me give that question to you first.
Yes, we did not address directly special education in this law, but that's why The state and rounded up a large number of grants from foundations, and we have appointed a statewide task force to review all aspects of special education and report in December of this year, 2014, for an overhaul of this program and of its funding system, which has been not reconsidered for many years. So that is on a slower but intensive track, and I agree with the caller's concern. For example, California has some of the lowest qualifications for teachers to be certified as teachers in special education of any state in the country. We're concerned about that. So that is, I think, an action item for 215. And we will have some comprehensive recommendations that go way beyond finance, but will include finance.
Yeah, and let's go next to Peter in Napa. Peter, do you have a call? I'm sorry. Let's go to Josh in Berkeley. You're a school board member, is that right, Josh?
Yes, I am.
Oh, go ahead. And what's your question?
I'm the school board president in Berkeley. We recently finished our local control and accountability plan. We did a pretty intensive outreach effort. We feel pretty good about the plan, but obviously looking to next year, we want to do even better. So with that in mind, I have a question for Jonathan Kaplan. And I'd like to know what type of information you think that a local school board or a school district like Berkeley should provide in our local control and accountability plan, you know, for next year beyond what is required under state law or state regulation.
Well, as Josh knows, each school district in the state is required to do a calculation to determine the percentage or share of dollars that are additive to devote towards disadvantaged students. And this calculation was sort of part of the rules that were established by the state board in January. But unfortunately, the steps of the calculation, the particular pieces of it, are not required to be reported by school districts to the community at large. So one of the pieces of information that's in that calculation is the baseline fund, the baseline spending that was appropriated for disadvantaged students in the prior year. So without that information, as the parent was speaking of earlier, there was only a certain amount of dollars available to a local school to devote towards increased services. But we would want to see very transparently how much money did the school district spend in the prior year, and then use that, and that is something that the school district is required to actually use in their calculation, but they're not required to report it transparently. So one of the things that we would look for is a baseline level of spending that we could see and be very clear and transparent so that it was easy for people to understand.
Josh, is that something you can do? Is that an option you have, even if it's not required?
Can do, and it actually something that we did to some extent in our most recent LCAP, but we obviously, we'll look to do it, again for next year.
Yeah, we're looking into that. That'll be on the agenda of the July meeting next Thursday in Sacramento. And these were temporary regulations we approved, and so the State Board of Education will approve the permanent regulations next week on Thursday. And we're working on this. This is a work in progress. I would add the fundamental accounting system in California is just completely not well designed to be transparent. It's based on the old system of finance we've talked about, which is a lot of compliance with narrow spending earmarks the state had. So I would hope we could move on to a broader discussion of, let's get a clear accounting system that's based on what we're trying to do now rather than what we were trying to do 30 years ago.
Yeah, I would agree. The old accounting system may not be sufficient, but something to look for in the permanent rules that Michael was just talking about in terms of what the state board is going to adopt is whether they allow local stakeholders and state policymakers to compare one district's use of dollars for disadvantaged students to another to leverage best practices across districts in the state.
We're discussing California's new local control funding formula, and we're going to Kat in San Jose. And you have a question, Kat. Go ahead.
Hi, I am a former chairperson of the school site council in the Evergreen School District and currently VP of Legislation Advocacy for the PTA for Evergreen. I've participated in several budget activities for the school district and for local schools. What I wanted to say is that it was an excellent experience for the Evergreen School District this year to participate in the LCAP. However, the caveat that I have is that there's really a serious lack of literacy on the part of parents and educators about what is entailed in the overall budgeting process for a school district. That's number one. Number two, the templates were difficult to work with, despite what the intent was to streamline the process and make it a more transparent experience in terms of accessing information. There is still difficulty working with that process. I think that in our school district, even though we had WestEd, an excellent consulting firm that facilitated a lot of our LCAP forums, lead us, that we had less than 10% parent participation in the entire process, and I hope that turns around in the coming year.
Yeah, Kat, can I ask you a question then? How would you suggest that there be more parent participation? How would districts do a better job of that?
I think the thing that would help is that there be an active outreach in teaching what the budgeting process is to the parent community. Use all kinds of communication mechanisms. It could be website-based. It could be webinars. It could be parent advisory councils. We've attempted some of these things, but it really has to be a conscious commitment on the part of the PTA and the school district so that parents truly understand that your funding sources are not uniquely one source of funds that comes from Sacramento through the local control funding formula. In reality, this is the misperception that we encountered this summer, is this year, that parents don't understand we're getting title program funding from the federal government. We require bond programs for capital improvements. We need parcel taxes to pay for other things within the school districts. Mm-hmm. We count on grants. We count on endowments. Yeah. We count on donations from the PTA.
Kat, let me get in here and just to ask Picolia Monago, who's on the phone with us as well. Do you think parents need a course in how school districts work and how school budgets work before they take part in these discussions?
Absolutely, and they should be integrated into the process, and that's kind of what we've been pushing here in Oakland, was that when you are saying you want to do input sessions into the LCAP, inherent to parent engagement and student engagement includes the level of transparency so that they can be trained. And so one of the things that the caller is bringing up is exactly what most stakeholders across the state are saying, is that you have changed the system, but there are still other elements that we need training on, in order to really be able to fully participate and to understand what the best use of LCFF funds would be. Even at our school site council, we had to sit and really look at our title funding. We had to look at LCFF and make strategic decisions about what we were going to use for title funding versus what we were going to use for LCFF, so that we were using those funds in alignment with the requirements and the regulations they're governed by. So when you go out to school communities and when you go out to community members who care about these children, they want to be able to participate, but they do need a base level of information. And I agree with the caller. This is one of the biggest cries all around the state.
Yeah,
for transparent information.
Life is tough if you're a parent with kids in school. We're discussing California's new local control funding formula, under which the state gives local school boards and administrators more control over how they spend their funds, especially for disadvantaged kids. We have an online comment here. A listener writes, "The Oakland School District under outgoing Superintendent Gary Yee and the school board ignored many schools. Money has not followed students, and many schools receive large cuts in an increased school budget for Oakland Unified." Ms. Monago, what was your experience there? Is that how would you characterize the way the Oakland School District did its job?
Well, Oakland did something a little different than other school districts in taking into account Alameda County Public Health Department data around race and poverty. Outgoing Superintendent Gary Yee dispersed concentration funds in a way that was in alignment with acknowledging environmental factors certain communities took were involved with, like, for example, empty parking lots, so on and so forth. It was not well received overall throughout the whole community, and there were certain school communities who did receive budget cuts, despite the fact that there was $14 million dispersed to school sites. And so it was one of the biggest things that we feel, again, when we say transparency, it is, again, as Michael Kirst said, a need to talk about all of the funds, not just the supplemental and concentration, but also the base, and to be transparent with the community about how you're dispersing funds or where you're going to be concentrating funds within departments. This is a huge component of transparency and going beyond just involving people in a decision or in a strategy that's already been decided within the district.
Let me go to another email here. All I'm hearing about, this is Steve writing, all I'm hearing about is catering to minimums and low performers. How are gifted and high performers being challenged to their potential? Michael Kirst, do you have a theory on that?
Yes. The money that that we've had and have invested, over 10% a year increase for the last 2 years, annually increase, most of that money went into the base of spending and not just into what we've been talking about here today, the supplemental and concentration funding for low-income children, for example. So we are looking for a much higher achievement for all pupils in all school districts, and that is in our lead policy there, which is a separate discussion that we've had on forum, is a new state and national movement called Common Core Curriculum, where we are revising our English language arts and math and standards. I would mention one thing on gifted. Our new assessment for this, you know, the old bubble test with fill in the blanks and you have four answers, that's gone. Our new assessment will be computer adaptive, meaning if you are answering questions well, we give you tougher questions. If you're not answering questions very well, we give you easier questions. So the computer, the entire assessment will be on the computer. It's called Smarter Balanced. And gifted students will really begin to probe what they know and be able to challenge them, because they were hitting the ceiling of our old tests, the bubble multiple choice tests. So that's one angle, and therefore the curriculum, I think, will have a lot higher level to it for some students.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Eric in Pleasanton with a question. Sorry. Eric, I'm sorry. We're going to you in Pleasanton. You had a comment on categoricals.
That's right. So I'm a teacher librarian at a large comprehensive high school. I wasn't on the LCAP committee, but I did go to all of the meetings, and I basically lobbied for the library. And I was successful, and that was great. My concern, though, is that if there aren't categoricals for specific programs like libraries, special ed, or counseling, that there may be, programs that will be overlooked in this process. And, that's especially important, especially with the Great Recession. A lot of library programs were gutted. And so if the librarians aren't there to represent their programs, the libraries will be overlooked. And in my opinion, the libraries do support all students, especially the students in the target demographics.
Yeah, we heard earlier from the Eastside Union High School District in San Jose's assistant superintendent, who said that they were adding libraries to schools. But let me turn to Jonathan Kaplan and just ask, are there concerns that that this new power that local districts have may turn out that some kinds of services, some kinds of resources may get thrown out with the bathwater?
Well, the caller makes a good point. I mean, we when you have a major change, as we've described this hour, you're going to have now decision making rest at the local level. And when there are when you've cut the strings attached to specific programs, whether it be libraries or other sorts of programs, it's going to be up to local stakeholders to really advocate for what they think is important. And ultimately, the decision will be made by local school boards. But one of the things that's really key here is the point is we don't have extra dollars here in this funding formula. What this funding formula did was addressed inequities by allocating dollars differently. And we really need to be thinking about how to grow the pie now that we've allocated the pie differently. How are we going to think about revenues and a funding structure that funds all programs adequately, whether it be librarians, counselors, or other programs that local stakeholders want to have?
Yeah, and let me go to Michael Kirst on that. You have seen a growth. We have seen a growth since the recession is slowly ending in the total schools budget. But you're still not – you're back at pre-recession levels, but you're not back to levels that would make everybody be able to brag about how well we spend money, how well we spend the money we spend on education in California.
Yes, California's, if you adjust for our high costs here, it costs more to run a school here than, say, Arkansas. We're, you know, down there near the five lowest in the country before we started these increases. We're doing somewhat better now. But I agree with Mr. Kaplan completely. We don't have at this point a real plan on how to get revenue so that all of the spending would be at an adequate level for meeting our new standards. And I think that's an issue for the future. You know, it's obviously a revenue issue. The governor and legislature have been redistributing the budget away from other functions and into K-12 education, but there's only so much you can do there. And there's no, I think at this point, long-run plan for adequate funding.
Let's go now back to the phones and talk to Peter in Napa, who's been very patient. Peter, what's your comment?
Yes, the gentleman on the panel just mentioned the smarter balance assessments, and so I wanted to pose a question to the panel regarding what role the results from those assessments will play and how significant of a metric that will be in accountability, because it seems to be something that's absent from a lot of these plans, primarily because it's unclear what these results will look like and how we'll be able to use them. But I wanted to get people's opinion in terms of how that might play a role in creating a need for that accountability.
Yeah, and that's even as Common Core comes in to California. Let me ask Michael Kirst that question first.
Yes, well, this is all a work in progress. All these comments, I think, on the local control funding and parent preparation and so on, I think these are all good. We're in the first year of a long-term effort. And as to the specific question, the board has under the legislation, State Board of Education has until 2:15 of October 2:15 to come up with what's going to be called a rubric, which is really what are the outcomes that school districts must meet with this new money. Again, we're not going to get into detail on how they should spend it, but they need to be held accountable for what outcomes there are. So we have not done anything there, but we are under a deadline. We will meet it, and that'll come out in 2:15. So we're starting with one part of the process, and then we'll move to the accountability side in a very aggressive way in 2:15.
And
so it's all under development.
And Jonathan Kaplan with the California Budget Project.
So, you know, one thing to pay attention to here is that this coming Thursday, we're having a State Board of Education meeting. And on that agenda on Thursday is this very issue. And there is an opportunity for the public to participate and comment on the regulations as they're being developed. This is something that's going to be going on for several months. And so people should be paying attention to what's happening with regard to local control funding, as well as also participating in the process so that they can develop rules and regulations that work for them.
Yeah, we have another caller. We're going to get to one more caller, I think, this hour. Sherry in San Jose, what did you want to ask about?
Yeah, hi, good morning. I participated in on the LCAP by being part of the our district advisory committee at San Jose Unified. It's the committee that oversees the spending on low socioeconomic, with that low socioeconomic money. And we had a few-hour review of our document. And one of the things that came out that was really interesting was that the money follows students based on their criteria, but not whether there's a huge need by that student. For example, you may have a child that's low socioeconomic, yet they are above proficient in their testing. So that doesn't quite mesh, and maybe that's something that will be looked at for the future. But I've actually found that with San Jose Unified, we are ahead of the curve. We have Dr. Matthews, who came from Oakland School District, and started a revamp of the way that the district was going to be running things. And so as we reviewed the LCAP, we found that the district had already had in place the pieces to make that transition, the writing of the LCAP, very simple. I actually have a question, though, also. Is the LCAP required by charter schools? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Michael Kirst.
Yes, it is. And the charter schools are fully covered, and it gives even more information on how they're doing. They're charter schools or public schools, and they're fully included in every single way.
We've been talking about local control funding formula for state schools and how administrators are gaining more control over how they spend their funds. That's all the time we have for the subject now. We'll be coming back to it, I'm sure, later this year. We were joined this hour by Picolia Manigo with the Bay Area Parent Leadership Action Network. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
By Jonathan Kaplan, an education and policy analyst with the California Budget Project, and by Michael Kirst, president of the State Board of Education. Thank you both.
Appreciate the opportunity.
You. Yeah, and earlier this hour, we had Juan Cruz on the line. He's the assistant superintendent for the Eastside Union High School District. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Thanks, Dan. I'm Cy Musiker. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.